Welcome to the Rapid Learning audio tutorial on limits and continuity. The learning objectives for this tutorial include to learn the meaning of the limit of a function, to learn how to find a limit using algebra, graphs, or tables, to learn about vertical asymptotes and removable discontinuities, to learn how asymptotes relate to limits at infinity, to learn what it means for a function to be continuous and how that relates to limits. Limits and continuity. Limits and continuity can be understood using algebra skills, including solving equations, factoring, plugging values into functions, finding zeros, and simplifying expressions. The concept map will link new content to previous content. The new content are limits involving infinity, which breaks down into two categories, limits at infinity and infinite limits. Both of these make use of the previous content of basic limits, algebra, and trigonometry. In this first section, we're going to talk about finding limits algebraically. After completing this section, you will be able to express limits verbally, understand limit notation, find the limit of a polynomial, find the limit of a function with a removable discontinuity. Limit definition. The limit of a function as x approaches a means the output or y value the function seems like it will reach as the independent variable x gets closer and closer to the number a. The notation for the limit of f of x as x approaches a is lim x with the arrow a underneath it, f of x. It's read the limit as x approaches a of f of x. How would you read this limit? If it said lim and then underneath it t arrow negative 7 and then in parentheses t squared plus 4t minus 1. Well, the answer would be the limit of t squared plus 4t minus 1 as t approaches negative 7. What does this limit mean? Well, it means what output value does t squared plus 4t minus 1 look like it's going to equal when the independent variable t gets closer and closer to negative 7. When you try to find a limit algebraically, there are a lot of things to consider. Now imagine this flowchart, which will help you make the decisions when you're trying to decide how to solve these things. So we begin with the idea we want to find a limit algebraically. The first thing we do is plug the value that the independent variable approaches into the function. Then we ask ourselves, what sort of value do you get? Well, there's three things that could happen. The first thing is we could get a real number, L. So what we got then is the limit by plugging in. L is the value of the limit. Well, what sort of value did you get? Sometimes we get an expression that has a divided by 0, where a is a whole number. If that happens, it indicates that this function has a vertical asymptote. So we may end up with plus or minus infinity, or the limit does not exist based on what the signs tell us when we study it a little closer. Or we could end up with the function 0 over 0. That indicates we have a removable discontinuity. We'll simplify the function to remove the discontinuity, and then we should be able to solve it by plugging back in. Let's talk about limits by plugging in. Sometimes you can find a limit by plugging the value the independent variable approaches into the functions. These steps tell you when and how you can do this. Step 1. Plug the value the independent variable is approaching into the function. Step 2. If you get a real number after simplifying, this number is the answer to the limit. Let's look at an example. Let's say we have the limit as x approaches negative 5 of the expression 1 plus x squared plus x cubed. Well, step 1 requires that we plug the value approached by the independent variable into the function. So if we do that, we would put negative 5 in place of x, and we would have 1 plus the quantity negative 5 squared plus the quantity negative 5 cubed, which would give us 1 plus 25 plus negative 125, which equals negative 99. Step 2 said, what did we get when we plug negative 5 into the function and simplify it? Well, we got negative 99, which is a real number. This means the limit equals negative 99. Let's have a note about polynomial limits. In the last example, the function was a polynomial. This always means you can find the limit by plugging in. Let's now discuss vertical asymptotes. A vertical asymptote is a line that the graph of a function gets closer and closer to, but never reaches. The function is undefined at the x value where the vertical asymptote occurs. Imagine you had a graph of a rational function. Usually what these graphs look like is there are two branches, one up to the right and one down to the left, and there will be one number for x where neither branch crosses or touches. You could draw in a vertical line between the two branches and neither branch would cross that line. That vertical line is called the asymptote. A vertical asymptotes occur at x values that are zeros of the denominator. Let's say we had the function f of x equals x divided by the quantity x minus 1 times the quantity x plus 2. Well, there are two places this denominator would equal 0. It could equal 0 at x equals 1, or it could equal 0 at x equals negative 2. That means when we go to sketch the graph, we will have vertical lines which will represent using dotted lines through the x-axis at negative 2 and through the x-axis at 1. When we go to graph this, the branches of the graph will approach these vertical lines but not cross them. Let's discuss finding limits at a vertical asymptote. Here's how to find the limit at a vertical asymptote. Plug the value the independent variable is approaching into the function. That's the first step. Step 2, if you get a fraction with a real non-zero number in the numerator and with a zero in the denominator, then you know there's a vertical asymptote. To find the limits at the asymptote, plug numbers a little bit less and a little bit more than the x value of the asymptote into the function. If both values are positive, it indicates the limit is approaching infinity. If both values are negative, it indicates the limit is negative infinity. If one is positive and one is negative, that tells you the limit does not exist. Let's look at an example where we're asked to find a vertical asymptote. Let's say the problem is the limit as x approaches 1/3 of 6x divided by 9x squared minus 6x plus 1. Step number 1 calls for us to plug the value approached by the independent variable into the function. So we'll put 1/3 in place of x, and we will get 6 times 1/3 or 2 in the numerator, and we will get 9 times 1/3 quantity squared minus 6 times 1/3 plus 1 in the denominator. That becomes 1 minus 2 plus 1, or we end up with 2 divided by 0. Step 2. We can see that we got a whole number over 0 when we plugged the value of x into the function. This means that we do have a vertical asymptote. Step number 3. Since there is a vertical asymptote at x equals 1/3, we now plug numbers a little less than 1/3 and a little more than 1/3 in for x to see what we get. We'll use the decimals 0.33 and 0.34. If we put 0.33 in for x, we get 6 times 0.33 divided by 9 times 0.33 squared minus 6 times 0.33 plus 1. This equals 19,800. If we put in 0.34 for x and solve, we're going to get 5,100. Since both numbers that we got were large positive numbers, this indicates the limit as x approaches 1/3 is infinity. Let's discuss removable discontinuities. A removable discontinuity is a single point that the graph of a function skips, usually the result of having a common factor in the numerator and denominator of the function, which can be divided out. Consider a function like f of x equals x squared minus 3x divided by 2x minus 6. This can be simplified to x times x minus 3 divided by 2 times x minus 3, and the x minus 3 divides out, leaving us with the simplified form as x divided by 2. Well, if we graph the original function, it's going to look a lot like the line x divided by 2, except there's going to be a hole in the graph at the ordered pair 3, 1.5. This hole in the graph is called a removable discontinuity. Let's discuss limits at a removable discontinuity. Here's how to find the limit at a removable discontinuity. You plug the value the independent variable is approaching into the function. If you get a fraction with 0 in the numerator and in the denominator, then there is a removable discontinuity. To find the limit at this removable discontinuity, try to factor the numerator and denominator, and then simplify. When the function is simplified, try plugging in again. The number you get is the answer to the limit. Let's look at an example. Let's say we're asked to find the limit as x approaches -3 of x squared minus 9 divided by x squared plus 3x. Well, plugging the value -3 in for x gives us 9 minus 9 or 0 in the numerator and 9 plus -9 or 0 in the denominator. We got 0 over 0 when we plug the value x approaches into the function. This means we have a removable discontinuity. Since there is a removable discontinuity at x equals -3, our next step is to factor the numerator and the denominator in order to simplify. Well, x squared minus 9 becomes x minus 3x plus 3, and x squared plus 3x becomes x times x plus 3. The x plus 3's divide out, leaving us x minus 3 divided by x. Notice that the factor you canceled out was x minus 3. This is what made the top and bottom 0 in the first place. Well, we simplified the function by dividing out the factor x minus 3 in the numerator and the denominator. We can now again try plugging in -3 for x into the simplified form to see if we get the limit. We will have -3 minus 3 in the numerator, which is -6, divided by -3 in the denominator, so that equals 2, so that tells us the limit is 2. In this section, we will look at limits at infinity. In this section, you will learn the concept of a limit at infinity, relate limits at infinity to horizontal asymptotes, learn how to evaluate a limit at infinity, and then apply limits at infinity to real-world phenomena. Consider the function f of x equals 1 divided by x. Note what happens to f of x as x gets larger and larger. Well, if you were graphing this and you let x get larger and larger, we would have values like 1 over 10,000, 1 over 100,000, 1 over a million. So what would happen is the larger x gets, the closer f of x would get to 0. The notion of x getting larger and larger is denoted by x with an arrow, which means approaching, and then the infinity sign, which looks like a sideways 8. Similarly, if x gets smaller and smaller, it's denoted by x approaches negative infinity, or x arrow negative sideways 8. For the function f of x equals 1 over x, we can say that f of x equals 0 when x approaches infinity or when x approaches negative infinity. Definition of limits at infinity. The notation, the limit as x approaches infinity of f of x equals L, indicates that as x gets larger and larger, the function f of x gets closer and closer to some number L. Similarly, the notation, the limit as x approaches negative infinity of f of x equals L, indicates that as x gets smaller and smaller, the function f of x gets closer to L. It is important to remember that as you study limits involving infinity, that the infinity symbol, the sideways 8, does not represent a number, but rather the concept of getting arbitrarily large. Consider the function f of x equals 2x squared plus 3 divided by x squared plus 2. The following tables gives values of f of x as x gets arbitrarily large or small. Consider this. If x was 1 or negative 1, and we plug those numbers in for 2x squared plus 3 divided by x squared plus 2, we would get 1.66666. If we plugged in plus or minus 5, we would get 1.96296. If we plugged 10 in for x or negative 10 in for x, we would get 1.99020. If we put 100 or negative 100 in for x, we would get 1.99990. And finally, if we put in 1,000 or negative 1,000, we would get 1.99999. So we can see that as we use a table to plug values in for x, We can generate what their y values are and notice if they're getting closer and closer and closer to some number. Well, in this case, they're both approaching the number 2. So both the table and the graph would indicate that the limit as x approaches infinity of 2x squared plus 3 divided by x squared plus 2 is 2, and the limit as x approaches negative infinity of 2x squared plus 3 divided by x squared plus 2 also equals 2. Let's consider a certain class of rational functions. Look at the graph of f of x equals 1 divided by x squared. This is a graph that has two branches that both go up forever as they get closer and closer to zero, both from the right and from the left. Also, as you travel clear to the right, so as the limit as x approaches infinity of 1 divided by x squared, it's going to equal 0. And the limit as x approaches negative infinity of 1 divided by x squared also equals 0. So more compactly, we can say the limit as x approaches plus or minus infinity of 1 divided by x squared is 0. Similarly, if we look at the graph of f of x equals 1 divided by x cubed, this graph also has branches, but there's one of them in quadrant 1 and the other one in quadrant 3. And it's pretty easy to see, if we start plugging in numbers, that the limit as x approaches infinity of 1 divided by x cubed is going to be 0. And the limit as x approaches negative infinity of 1 divided by x cubed is also 0. We can more compactly write this: the limit as x approaches positive or negative infinity of 1 divided by x cubed is 0. It's easy then to generalize the results for this whole class of functions. The limit as x approaches positive or negative infinity of 1 divided by x raised to the nth power is going to be 0 as long as n is a positive real number. Let's look at an example of a limit at infinity. Let's say we're asked to find the limit as x approaches infinity of 4x squared minus 5x divided by 2x squared plus 7. Well, we begin by dividing each term by the highest power of x. Remember, the highest power of x is also called the degree. So we'll go back to our problem, which is the limit as x approaches infinity of 4x squared minus 5x divided by 2x squared plus 7, and we'll divide every term by x squared. This will cause the numerator to be 4 minus 5 divided by x, and the denominator to be 2 plus 7 divided by x squared. Well, remember what we just determined, that the limit as x approaches positive or negative infinity of 1 divided by x to the nth power is 0. So what that ends up doing to our problem is we end up taking the limit as x goes to infinity of simply 4 divided by 2, which happens to equal 2. Here's another example. Let's say we're asked to find the limit as x approaches infinity of 7x plus 1 divided by 3x squared minus 2x. Well, we begin by dividing each term by the highest power of x, which happens to be x squared. So that's going to give us the limit as x goes to infinity of 7x over x squared plus 1 divided by x squared all over 3x squared over x squared minus 2x over x squared. We end up with the limit as x goes to infinity of 7 divided by x plus 1 divided by x squared divided by 3 minus 2 divided by x. We end up with 0 over 3, which equals 0. There's shortcuts for limits at infinity. If the highest exponent of the numerator is less than the highest exponent of the denominator, then the limit will always equal 0. The first problem we had, the limit as x approaches infinity of 7x plus 1 over 3x squared minus 2x approaches 0. If the highest exponent of the numerator is equal to the highest exponent of the denominator, then the limit equals the ratio of the leading coefficients. So the problem that was 4x squared minus 5x divided by 2x squared plus 7, both of those exponents in the numerator and the denominator are 2, so we simply take the 4 divided by 2, which gives us 2. In example 1, we've got the limit as x approaches infinity for f of x, where f of x equals 8x squared minus 4x plus 1 divided by 7x cubed plus 5x. Well, the numerator is 8x squared and the denominator is 7x cubed. The numerator is less than the denominator, so the limit has to equal 0. Example 2. Find the limit as x approaches negative infinity for g of x, where g of x equals 3x squared plus 2x divided by negative x squared plus 1. This limit would equal negative 3 because our ratio would be 3 as the leading coefficient in the numerator divided by negative 1 as the leading coefficient in the denominator. Let's discuss how this relates to horizontal asymptotes. If the limit at infinity exists and equals a number, say L, then the line y equals L is a horizontal asymptote for the function. Look at those two examples we just did. The first one, 8x squared minus 4x plus 1 divided by 7x cubed plus 5x, had a limit equal to 0. This means this function f of x would have a horizontal asymptote at y equals 0. The second example, g of x, had a limit equal to negative 3. So this means g of x has to have a horizontal asymptote at y equals negative 3. Consider this function, y equals the arctan of x. It actually has two horizontal asymptotes. One of them's at y equals pi over 2, and the other's at y equals negative pi over 2. Therefore, if we were finding the limit as x goes to infinity of the arctan of x, it would be pi over 2, because as you go out and get larger and larger for x, the graph approaches positive pi over 2. But the limit as x approaches negative infinity for the arctangent of x happens to be negative pi over 2, because as you travel to the left and the numbers get smaller and smaller, the graph approaches negative pi over 2. This is the section we're going to discuss infinite limits. In this section, we will review the definition of an infinite limit, relate infinite limits to vertical asymptotes, generalize the concept of infinite limits to include infinite limits at infinity. Recall that an infinite limit means that the function approaches infinity or negative infinity. So let's say we have a vertical asymptote going through the graph at some value of a. If we take the limit as x approaches a for f of x, and the graph is forever going up as it approaches that, we would say then that its limit would be infinity. If we were approaching the line x equals a and the f of x graph was forever going down, we would say the limit approaches negative infinity. Many infinite limits lead to vertical asymptotes. There is a vertical asymptote at x equals a if the limit as x approaches a of f of x equals infinity, or the limit as x approaches a of f of x equals negative infinity. Now this definition can be generalized to one-sided limits. For example, let's say we're asked to find all asymptotes of f of x equals 3 divided by x minus 4. Well, we start by finding the one-sided limits. That is, we find the limit as x approaches 4 from the right of 3 divided by x minus 4, and the limit as x approaches 4 from the left of 3 divided by x minus 4. Now, if x is close to 4 but not larger, then the quantity x minus 4 is a small negative number, meaning that 3 divided by this small negative number will become a large negative number. And if x is close to 4 but larger than 4, then the quantity x minus 4 is a small positive number, meaning that 3 divided by x minus 4 is a large positive number. Therefore, the limit as x approaches 4 from the right would be positive infinity, and the limit as x approaches 4 from the left would be negative infinity, so we know there's a vertical asymptote at x equals 4. Now remember from earlier, when we look at the degree of the numerator and compare it to the degree of the denominator, the numerator's degree is less, so we also know there's a horizontal asymptote at y equals 0. There are certain graphs that have lots of vertical asymptotes. One of these examples would be y equals the tangent of x. Because this trig function is periodic in nature, there will be values where it's undefined regularly. For y equals the tangent of x, those vertical asymptotes occur at negative 3 pi over 2, pi over 2, negative pi over 2, and positive 3 pi over 2. Another trig function that has vertical asymptotes is y equals the cosecant of x. These occur at negative 2 pi, negative pi, 0 pi, pi over 2, etc., because of the periodic nature of the graph. Another graph that has a vertical asymptote would be y equals the natural log of x. Here one exists at the value x equals 0. Let's say we're asked to find all of the asymptotes of f of x equals the square root of 4x squared plus 1 divided by x plus 3. Asymptotes in a problem that has a square root in it require us to take a second look. Consider the expression 4x squared plus 1. When x gets near infinity, there's really no difference between 4x squared plus 1 and just 4x squared. But there's a big difference when we go to try to figure this out and evaluate it. It's much easier to evaluate the limit as x approaches infinity of the square root of 4x squared divided by x plus 3 than it is to find the limit as x approaches infinity of the square root of 4x squared plus 1 divided by x plus 3. What we want to do is we want to take the limit as x approaches infinity of the square root of 4x squared divided by x plus 3. Well, if it's just the square root of 4x squared, we can simplify that to 2x, but we have to put it inside absolute value bars because we have to make sure that the answer to a square root problem is positive. Well, now when we find the limit as x goes to infinity of the absolute value of 2x divided by x plus 3, what we have is a positive number in the numerator, a positive number in the denominator, and since their 2 degrees are equal, we can take 2 divided by 1 and get 2. Let's see what happens if we go the other direction and we try to find the limit as x approaches negative infinity. Well, we're simplifying the square root of 4x squared divided by x plus 3, and that's going to give us the limit as x approaches negative infinity of the absolute value of 2x divided by x plus 3. The numerator will be a positive large number, the denominator will be a negative number, so when we simplify this, we'll get negative 2. As is in the case with many limits where a radical is involved, there are two horizontal asymptotes. One of them's at y equals 2, and the other's at y equals negative 2. The vertical asymptote for this problem could be found by setting the denominator equal to 0. So we set x plus 3 equal to 0, and we get x equals negative 3, so there has to be a vertical asymptote at x equals negative 3 to go along with the two horizontal ones at y equals 2 and y equals negative 2. Here's a definition for the infinite limit at infinity. An infinite limit at infinity means that f of x approaches positive or negative infinity as x approaches positive or negative infinity. Here's an example. Let's say we're asked to find the limit as x approaches infinity of x cubed. Well, since x cubed goes to infinity, when x goes to infinity, our solution would be the limit as x approaches infinity of x cubed is infinity. Let's look at another example of an infinite limit at infinity. Let's say we're asked to find the limit as x approaches infinity of the quantity x to the fourth minus x cubed. Well, we first might be tempted to write this as the limit as x approaches infinity of x to the fourth minus the limit as x approaches infinity of x cubed, but this result gives us infinity minus infinity, which we don't have a solution for. However, we could factor the expression and get the limit as x approaches infinity of x cubed times the quantity x minus 1. This will give us infinity times infinity, which we know means it's approaching infinity. In this section, we're going to look at continuity problems. This section will help you to understand the concept of continuity at a point and over an interval. It will help us to understand discontinuity better and some types of discontinuities that we'll encounter. We'll use the concept of continuity to help us find the limits. Here's a definition of continuity and discontinuity. F of x is continuous at the point x equals a if the following equation is true. The limit as x approaches a of f of x equals f of a. If the limit and the value are not equal, or if the function is undefined at x equals a, then it is discontinuous. In other words, if a function approaches and passes through a point, then the function is continuous at that point. If the function approaches one value but suddenly jumps to another value, or if the function is undefined, The function is discontinuous at that point. An informal way of considering this is basically this. If you can draw the graph of a function without ever picking up your pencil, then we say the function is continuous. But if you're drawing a graph and you have to make a hole or a jump somewhere in the function, then it would not be continuous. Here are some examples of functions that are continuous everywhere. Trig functions like f of x equals the sine of x or f of x equals the cosine of x, you can draw without ever picking up your pencil, so they're continuous. Some rational functions like f of x equals 2 divided by x squared plus 1 are continuous everywhere because there's no place that the denominator equals 0. The polynomial functions like f of x equals x squared plus 2x plus 1, they're continuous. And also some exponential functions like f of x equals 1 half raised to the x power are continuous. Here are some examples of places where functions are discontinuous or have discontinuities. For example, let's say we had f of x equals the square root of x. Well, wherever f of x is undefined, it would be discontinuous. If we had a function like f of x equals x divided by x minus 4, it would be discontinuous at its vertical asymptote. A function like f of x equals x minus 1 times x plus 3 divided by x plus 3 would be discontinuous at the place where there's a hole in the graph because the numerator and denominator share the factor. Some other ones you might see is a jump discontinuity where you have two pieces, but you have to pick your pencil up from one piece before you can draw the other. Using continuity for limits. As we saw, continuity is defined using limits, but we can also use continuity's help in finding limits. If you know the function is continuous, its limit as x approaches a equals its value at a. So to find the limit as x approaches a, just plug a into the function. Stop and think about this for a second. Consider the following three functions. F of x equals e raised to the negative 2x power, f of x equals x divided by x minus 1, or f of x equals x squared divided by x to the fourth plus 9. Which of these functions are continuous everywhere? Well, if you answered 1 and 3, you would be correct. Function 2, x divided by x minus 1, is not continuous because it's got a vertical asymptote at x equals 1. Now, I realize function 3 is also a rational function, but there's no place that x to the fourth plus 9 equals 0, so it would be continuous everywhere. In this section, we'll take a look at some continuity problems. After completing this section, you will be able to find the function's discontinuities, if it has any, and find the limits of piecewise functions. Discontinuities. Functions are at their strangest and most fascinating at their discontinuities. Calculus is especially interested in these unique occurrences. A black hole is a discontinuity in space and time. Let's discuss some common discontinuities. There's a small group of common situations that cause discontinuities when they occur in equations of functions. The first one that'll cause a discontinuity is zero in the denominator. For example, if you had a function like f of x equals 1 divided by 1 minus x squared, it would equal 0 when x equals 1 or negative 1, so it would be discontinuous at those points. Another one to consider is if there's negative values in a square root. Let's say we had the function f of x equals the square root of x minus 4. Well, whenever x is less than 4, you would have negative values under the square root, so the function would not be continuous there. The third case would be non-positive values in a logarithm. Let's say we had the function f of x equals the natural log of the quantity x cubed plus 8. Well, if x was less than or equal to negative 2, this would have non-positive values, which would make it discontinuous. Here are the steps for finding the discontinuities in a function. Look for the operations that commonly cause discontinuities. Denominators that could be 0, square roots of things that could be negative, and logarithms of things that could be non-positive. Then solve the equations that would result in these discontinuities. For example, find the discontinuities in the function f of x equals 2x divided by 1 minus radical x. Step number one is to identify anything that might cause this to be discontinuous. Well, the first thing would be, could the denominator equal 0? And the second thing could be, there's a square root which may have a negative inside of it. So to solve the equations that would cause these discontinuities will tell us where they exist. So we'll set the denominator 1 minus radical x equal to 0 and solve, and we'll get x equals 1. We also know that the square root of x could be negative any time x is less than 0. So for the function f of x equals 2x divided by 1 minus radical x, the function will be discontinuous at x less than 0 and at x equals 1. There's no values at x less than 0 because it can't be solved if it's got a negative radical, and there's a vertical asymptote at x equals 1. Piecewise functions. Piecewise function is a single function that's defined by different equations over different intervals. Here's an example. Let's say we have f of x equal to the following three pieces. 2x plus 4 for x less than negative 2, x squared minus 1 for negative 2 less than or equal to x less than 0, and 3 for x greater than or equal to 0. 2x plus 4's graph is a line, but we don't draw the entire line, we only draw it from negative infinity up to negative 2. X squared minus 1 is a parabola, but we only draw the piece of parabola from negative 2 to 0. 3 is a horizontal line, but we only draw the piece of the line from 0 on. Here's how to find the limit of a piecewise function. Step 1. Identify the value x is approaching. Decide if it is within one of the intervals or a transition point between two equations. If it is within one of the intervals, just find the limit of the corresponding function. If it's a transition, find the two limits of the function on either side. If the two limits are equal, their values are the overall answer. If they are unequal, then the limit does not exist. Let's look at an example for a piecewise limit. Let's say we have the function f of x equals 1 minus x divided by 3 for x less than 3, and the natural log of the quantity x minus 2 for x greater than or equal to 3. We're going to find the limit as x approaches 3 of f of x. Step number 1. Identify the value x is approaching. Decide if it is within one of the intervals or the transition point between the two intervals. X is approaching 3. This is the transition point between the two equations. Since x is approaching a transition point, what we need to do is find the two limits of the functions on either side. So we take and we put 3 in for x in the first function, and we find the limit as x approaches 3 of 1 minus x divided by 3, which becomes 1 minus 3 divided by 3, which is 1 minus 1 or 0. Then we take 3 and we put it in the second function. We find the limit as x approaches 3 of the natural log of the quantity x minus 2. This becomes the natural log of 3 minus 2, which becomes the natural log of 1, which is 0. Did you notice how easy it was to find those two limits? Since both of those functions are continuous at x equals 3, we were able to find the limit by just plugging the value in place. Well, step 3 in our process says if the two limits are equal, their values are the overall answer. If they're unequal, the limit does not exist. Both of our limits equaled 0, so that means the limit as x approaches 3 of f of x is 0. If we would look at the graph of this particular piecewise function, what we would see is that the graph connects at the point 3. The two pieces connect at x equals 3. 1 minus x divided by 3 is a ray that begins at 3 and travels to the left. The natural log of the quantity x minus 2 is a curve that begins at 3 and travels to the right. The fact that they are connected at 3 makes this function continuous. Clearly, only special piecewise functions will be continuous at their transition points, like in the example we just did. A common calculus problem will ask you to choose the value of some unknown value k to make a piecewise function continuous everywhere. Here's how you solve such a problem. Step 1. Plug the transitional x value into both equations. Since one or both equations will have an unknown k, you might get a variable expression. Step 2. Set the two results equal to each other and solve for k. For example, what values of k will make the following piecewise function continuous everywhere? F of x equals kx squared plus 1 for x less than or equal to negative 1, and f of x equals 2x minus k for x greater than negative 1. Step number 1. Plug the transitional x value into both equations. So it becomes k times the quantity negative 1 squared plus 1, which becomes k plus 1. Then we plug negative 1 into the second equation for x, and we get 2 times negative 1 minus k, which equals negative 2 minus k. Step number 2 is to set the values equal to each other and solve for k. So we have the equation k plus 1 equals negative 2 minus k. Solving that's going to give us k equals negative 1.5. So we now know that this function would be continuous everywhere if k equals negative 1.5. That would make it negative 1.5x squared plus 1 for x less than or equal to negative 1, and 2x minus 1, a negative 1.5, so 2x plus 1.5 for x greater than negative 1. It's now time for our learning summary. A function is continuous at a particular x value if the limit as x approaches that number and the function's y value are equal. Infinite limits at infinity means that both x and the function approach some combination of infinity or negative infinity. If a function is continuous at a certain place, you can find that function's limit by simply plugging in. An infinite limit means that the function approaches infinity or negative infinity. An infinite limit indicates there is a vertical asymptote. A discontinuity is a place where the function is not continuous or where it's undefined. You should try factoring and simplifying to find the limit of a function with a removable discontinuity. Congratulations! You have just finished the audio tutorial on limits and continuity from the Rapid Learning Center.